After the villagers took their places and sang a bright, powerful song to drive away evil, Mayor Horvu ignited a piece of kindling and applied the flames to the heart of the woodpile. Parents and children came forward to light their brands in the growing fire, and then stepped back. When the people all fell silent, holding their flickering torches, she had everyone's attention. Jessica would tell the tale, just as their fallen Duke Leto used to do. A long time ago, in a quiet fishing village, there lived a man whose soul died within him after a terrible fever, but his body didn't follow in death. Even though everyone else thought he had recovered, the emptiness inside grew and grew, and no one could see the change, because his body remembered how to be human. The man discovered that the only way to stop the emptiness from growing was to fill it up with pain. She paused for dramatic effect, looking at the shining eyes of her listeners. Children began to vanish from the beaches, and small fishing boats were found adrift and crewless. Bodies were discovered at low tide on the shore. Young men went out on errands and never returned. And as the emptiness inside the man grew hungrier, he became so bold in his need to find victims that finally he was caught. She whispered, leaning forward to three boys who stood close. The townspeople pursued the man up into the headlands and cornered him at the edge of a cliff. But when they moved to take him into custody so that the Duke could dispense justice, the man hurled himself off the precipice, down to the wave-washed rocks. Jessica turned to face the dark sea beyond the edge of the firelight. The next morning, when they fished his body out of the water, they found only an empty skin, like a discarded suit with nothing else inside. An empty man. Some of the listeners giggled, others muttered nervously. Jessica held up her small brand. And now, let us all light our... A commotion came from behind the group. A party of five men marched up the trail in the darkness, dressed in the garments of Muad'Dib's priesthood, all yellow except the leader. Wearing an orange robe, he exhibited an air of self-importance, as if he were entitled to attend any private ceremony he chose. I bear a proclamation in the name of Muad'Dib. These words are for the people of Caladan. Jessica stepped forward. Can this not wait? This is our festival. The words of Muad'Dib will not wait for a local matter, the priest said, as if the comment should have been self-evident. This proclamation comes from Korba the panegyrist, official spokesman for the priesthood and representative of the Holy Emperor Muad'Dib. Because Caladan is sacred as the childhood home of Muad'Dib, its name must reflect its importance. People from ancient times named this planet Caladan, but such a name no longer has sufficient relevance. Just as Arrakis is now called Dune by the faithful, so Caladan has been renamed Hizra Sala Muad'Dib, which in the language of the desert means the glorious origin of Muad'Dib. Korba has hereby decreed that all future maps of the Imperium shall reflect this change. Henceforth, your people shall be honored to use the new name in all of your writings and conversations. Jessica was amazed at the audacity of this man. She wondered if Paul even knew about this ridiculous idea. The supercilious Kizaret probably deemed the matter beneath Muad'Dib's notice. She cut the priest off immediately, addressing him with the full authority of her position as Duchess. That is unacceptable. I will not allow you to strip these people of their heritage. You cannot... The priest interrupted her, much to her astonishment and annoyance. This is about more than their heritage. He regarded each person who held a flickering torch to ward off evil. Now those lights seemed small and weak. The priest seemed to see nothing but his own importance. We will provide copies of the proclamation so that they may be distributed among those who are not here. The word of Muad'Dib must be heard by everyone. He placed a copy of the document into the trembling hands of Mayor Horvu. He also gave one to Gurney, who tossed it to the ground, where stray breezes snatched it and swept it over the edge of the cliff. The priest pretended not to notice. The blazing bonfire grew brighter and hotter as the five priests wended their way back down the path, letting the crowd pick up the festival once more. But Jessica was no longer in any mood for celebrating. The expectations of civilized society should afford all the protection a person needs, but that armor is rendered as thin as tissue when one is dealing with the uncivilized. Bene Gesserit Archives. Entering the den of a lion, a Carino lion. Thanks to protocol machinations with the guild, Jessica arrived at the same time as Chaney and Irulan, and all converged at the new complex the exiled Carinos had built. Shaddam's new city was a cluster of connected domes, each of which contained shielded buildings so that the inhabitants could, with some amount of imagination, pretend that they were still on Catane. Ages ago, Seleucus Secundus had been the lavish capital of the Imperium, but a disgraced noble family had unleashed enough atomics to devastate the world, wrecking the climate and deluging it with fallout and uncontrolled fires. Seleucia had been a dead place for a long, long time, but by now the background radioactivity had dwindled to nominal levels, and persistent life emerged in a weak new spring. With the vigorous work of Paul's terraforming teams, Jessica expected Seleucia to reawaken rather quickly. The exiled court welcomed the representatives of Emperor Muad'Dib with great fanfare. Standing there as Chaney and Irulan arrived in a suspensor-borne barge made for showy processions, Jessica wondered what other use Shaddam had for such a vessel here. She watched the fallen emperor attempt to smile. After all his years of ruling on Catane, Jessica thought he would have been better at it by now. His whole body seemed to cringe. She noted streaks of gray in the nobleman's reddish hair, and she could also see the unconcealed, simmering resentment on his thin face. Not surprising, since she represented Paul Muad'Dib, the man who had defeated him. Jessica observed Count and Lady Fenring, both of whom kept themselves surrounded by members of the large reception party. Shaddam's daughters clustered at the front of the group. Josepha and Chalice seemed eager to see their sister again, or at the very least pleased to participate in royal pomp and splendor again. Wencicia, though, wore a sour expression as she clung to her little boy's hand so tightly that he squirmed with discomfort. The loud music played a dramatic-sounding Catane march, then dropped off into sudden silence. Surrounded by yellow-robed priests and crisply-uniformed Fedaikan guards, Irulan and Chaney emerged from the ornate barge. Chaney slipped back her hood to reveal elfin features, dusky skin, dark red hair, and blue within blue eyes. She wore clothes fitted to desert environments, practical garments rather than showy. Next to the formally dressed Irulan, Chaney seemed on edge, a Fremen fighter among known enemies. Jessica knew there was no love lost between the two women, but they had a common goal now. Irulan regarded her family with an icy gaze and a stony expression. She did not seem overly pleased to visit them, and Jessica detected a similarly veiled animosity from the Carinos. Such complex relationships here. The silence lasted an instant too long, as if no one knew who would speak first. Then, with a nudge, the unrealistically young-looking new chamberlain delivered the official greeting.
Shaddam Carino IV welcomes the representatives of Emperor Muad'Dib.
The young man's voice was a bit too high, a bit too thin, and it quavered as if the volume of his own amplified words startled him. Jessica decided he must have been stuffed into a uniform and told what to say without being given much training. Shaddam's last formal chamberlain, Billy Redondo, had been executed in front of Aaliyah 6 years ago because he'd made too many demands about the ecological restoration of Seleucus Secundus. This one bowed awkwardly.
"May you be inspired to accelerate the terraforming work being done here in the name of God."
With a smooth step, Jessica reached out her hands to greet the two women. Clasping Chaney's hand in her right and Irulan's in her left, the movement also neatly put herself in front of the fallen emperor.
"My son asked me to join both of you here to ensure a successful visit."
Chaney bowed, and her expression showed genuine warmth.
"Thank you, Sayadina. It has been too long, and I'm glad you're here."
Irulan chose to address Shaddam, and she did not bow.
"We welcome this visit to your home on Seleucus Secundus, father. In return, please accept the good wishes of my beloved husband, the true emperor."
So many sharp barbs loaded in that one statement, directed at both Chaney and the Carinos, Jessica thought. And Irulan knew exactly what she had done.